Hello, everybody. I'm a little nervous, but I just pray and get out of God's way, so I try. My childhood was pretty chaotic and broken, and Mom had a few divorces, and she was pretty broken. And she would stay gone a lot. And before we went to foster care, she was absent a lot. She ran a bar, and we had a fire. And I was about five. The babysitter was looking under the couch with a match for change, and dropped the couch on the match when the phone rang. And then when the fire started, she ran out the door. So I got the little kids up, and the youngest one was in the crib, and I pulled him over the crib and onto myself, and we went out the door. And the neighbor took us in, and she called Mom. She said she couldn't close the bar and come home. So that was just one example of the chaos. And she had a habit of leaving us kids. You know, she'd ask for a babysitter, and staying gone the one night or the two nights, she'd stay gone three or four. And my grandma got tired of this, her mother, and she called the authorities on her. And I don't know how many times that happened. I just know what grandma said. And then she took us to this babysitter. There was five of us at this point. And we were supposed to be there two nights because her boyfriend was home from the Army. Well, he went AWOL, and Mom stayed with him, and she didn't come home for 5 days. Well, this lady must have talked to Grandma because she called the authorities also. And what happened was Grandma said we were going to foster care. So I didn't know what foster care was, but Grandma lived a block over, and if we could have went straight through, you know, it could have just been at her place. So I grew up in St. Paul, and where Grandma was, the yards were back to back. So across the backyard and down one house, there was this nice big bush, and I was going to take a blanket and some snacks and Tang, you know, all this important survival food. And I was going to hide out so these authorities couldn't get me. Well, they fooled us, and they picked us up at school. So I was at Cathedral School, and my grandpa worked at the Cathedral Church. And so she picked up, two different ladies came. One picked up us two older kids and took us to a foster home, and they picked up the three younger kids, and I didn't know. I thought they went to another foster home, but they went with their dad for a while. So my foster homes, I was in two, and that was the first experience of stability. And the first foster home, we always went to church, and in our closets there was little step areas at the bottom, and she had us make little altar for our prayer time. And so that was, we could go in there and pray or talk to God or whatever. And so that was kind of my first experience on that type of prayer. I grew up Catholic, and I knew we made our communion, we were a bride of Christ. When we made our confirmation, we were a soldier in God's army. And so those kind of stuck with me pretty good. And I loved singing in the choir, even though my voice is always off tune. And I can tell when I'm off tune and there's little kids around, they're like, I can tell when I'm really off, you know, but I love to sing anyway. So anyway, so that the first foster home, you know, they were an older couple, and it was very peaceful, and there was respect in their relationship. There wasn't yelling and arguing and hitting, and I'd never seen that type of relationship before, because There was always arguing. Well, I guess I did with my aunt and uncle because they had a very loving relationship, but Mom didn't like to go out there too much, and I think it's because of her shame. But what she would do, because it was hard to keep up on laundry with five kids when you're a single mom, so we would have to change our clothes in the car after she bought them. And I'm like, I can't change my clothes in the car. So I would get yelled at, but I did change them. But it was fun at Auntie and Uncle's, too, because it was peaceful and fun, and the cousins were a blast. And they had nine kids, and Mom ended up having nine kids, so it was a big group, you know. And Uncle was from Mexico, so we got to taste a lot of authentic food, you know. So that was fun. But in the second foster home, we always said the rosary every night on her knees, which in the Catholic Church, that's praying to Mary. And when I was raising my kids, my teenage girls are like, why are we praying to Mary? I was like, I don't know. That's what they tell us to do, you know. So I never knew why Mom wouldn't go to church with us. And it turned out that as I got older, well, after foster care, I guess, I found out she was excommunicated from the Catholic Church because she did not live faithful to her first husband, who was remarried in the Lutheran Church. And he had nine kids, too. I don't know what's with this nine, but the older two were my brother and sister that I didn't meet till I was 12. They found out I wasn't the oldest, and I'm like, what? You know, what do you mean there's an older brother and sister? So family was really kind of split. And then with that, going into foster care, you know, the siblings really weren't as close because we were in separate in different groups. And so that kind of estranged us from each other. And after my three younger siblings went with their dad, they ended up in a really bad foster home. And they were on the downstairs level, and they didn't get enough food, and they were eating out of the dog food bag. And I mean, they just didn't have the experience that I did, which is really sad. But one other thing I wanted to say about the Catholic Church is that I really did like the Stations of the Cross, where we would, you know, they had 12 of them. I looked them up again because it's been a while. But, you know, they had the different stages along Jesus' journey to the cross. And so that was kind of powerful to pray at each station for his journey. I think in Jerusalem, it's called the Via Dolorosa, and they reenact that. So that was pretty powerful. And then in my second foster home, they got respite care. And I was in a respite foster home where they had a break. And we went to an evangelist meeting. And I did my first altar call at 9 years old. And that was pretty instrumental because in all the chaos that came after that, I know he kept his hand on me or I wouldn't be standing here, you know. So after foster care, took her 5 years to get us back, but she kept fighting. And she did get us back, and it would have been better if she didn't get us back. But one thing I want to say before I leave the younger years is that I had a couple family members that introduced me to inappropriate touch. And one said I was special, and the other one said I could save his life. And that also set the groundwork for future relationships. And after foster care, Mom was still gone a lot of nights, and I would be home with the kids. And I remember I went up into the bar when I was 14, and I said, "You've been gone 5 days. These are your kids, and you need to come home." And she said, "I'm 36 and you're 14. You don't tell me what to do." I said, "Well, if you're not home in a couple of hours, I'm leaving." And the kids begged me not to leave, but I had to teach my mom, you know. We didn't have all the phone stuff. I kept calling to check on them, but she didn't come home till the next day. And them kids were terrified. "You know she can't take care of us. You got to do it." And anyway, I got enrolled in this Upward Bound program, which was for high school students, where you could stay at campus in the summer and take college prep classes. And I was the first one of our family to go to college. Only took me 17 years to get a four-year degree, but I got it. You know, go around the block to get next door. That was my thing. But I met my first love there, and we were talking on the phones and meeting at events that they had during the school year. And so anyway, he started talking about wanting sex. And his thing was, "If you love me, you will. You know I love you." And I'm thinking, "Well, God forgive me if I do it ahead, as long as we get married." So anyway, I did give in. He didn't marry me. So I considered myself damaged goods, and that was the start of my downward spiral. And then my mom turned, or wait a minute, I already had a kid by then. I turned 16 on September 28th, and I had my first child October 9th. And, you know, by then I was engaged to somebody else. And he was in jail for both my proms, and we still got married. You know what I mean? That's that early conditioning, you know. It's just, I love him, I got to stand by him no matter what. And he tried to have sex with my mother, my auntie, and my sister, my older sister that I met. And I still married him because Mom said he would never marry me. My kids are biracial. My husband was a black man. And she said, "Black men only want white women to have children with. They will never marry you." So I had to prove her wrong, you know. And he said, "I don't think I'm really ready to get married." And I'm like, "Oh, no, my mom said you're going to." Yeah, oh boy, you know. So anyway, Mom died when I was 23 and she was 46. Grandma had died at 59. And I thought, well, my life could be half over. I better get busy and do what I want. Did I do my writing? Did I stay a good mom? No, I took off with drinking and just feeling, you know, when I got pregnant, I found out my dad wasn't my dad, and this was the second time, because the first time in my second foster care home, my grandmother showed me my birth certificate, and it was a different guy than my stepdad. So your real dad, your stepdad, who's the dad, you know? And then she gave me a couple other names, so I have one dad, and he's up there. I mean, the one with my birth certificate, he was my dad for a while until I started dating the black guy. Then he wasn't my dad no more. So after Mom died when I was 23 and had 32, I was sitting there with the five kids. I had my four, and my younger brother was 9 when my mother died. And I looked around the room and I thought, I'm here with them physically, but there's nothing inside. I was dead inside, you know, from all the shame and the acting out. You know, I like to say the lights are on, but nobody was home. You know, my eyes look dead. I just, I didn't know what else to do. I called the county on myself, and I said, you have to take these five kids. they need more than me. I yell. I hit. I have nothing left to give them. They deserve better than me. And she said, ma'am, we can help you figure this out. We cannot take them just because you're tired. I say, you don't understand. This body is a shell. Insides are dead and I can't do this. So they sent us to Parents Anonymous, which is a support group for parents that neglect or abuse their children. And this was, like I said, I grew up in St. Paul, and this was at the YWCA downtown St. Paul. Parking was a nightmare. So getting five kids ready and getting down there, they loved it. They each had their own group, their own little support group, and then we parents had our thing, and it was a good thing. But man, in that winter is trying to get them ready and find parking, I gave up. I'm good at starting and bad at staying with it, not consistent at all. So the kids were upset because they craved those few hours of sanity, After this, I put my youngest daughter had been on the run for 6 months. And when she came back, the guy that brought her back said that she had been on drugs and in prostitution. And it was the sixth grade school bus driver that had groomed five girls and got them all out there on the streets. And so I put her in mental health treatment and found out all kinds of stuff that happened to her. And so they transferred her from the mental health to the chemical dependency unit. So I was sitting in that parent orientation meeting when they're talking about the alcoholic addict, and I started crying because they were talking about me. So the lady said, if you think you got a problem, find your way to a meeting. Why? What does that mean? I didn't think of asking the treatment people. So I knew my friend's husband had went to St. Mary's, and I didn't know this was a treatment place. I just knew he went there when he sobered up. So it took me 8 days driving to the parking lot and just crying because I didn't want to be one. But I finally got in the room, and she told me where the meeting was, and 12 men went in that room and not one woman. I was like, I can't do that. So I finally thought to talk to the treatment people. And I found out where there was a woman's meeting. And this lady said she had 8 years sobriety. I said, that's got to be a lie. But just in case, I asked her to be my sponsor. So that started my path on sobriety. And man, when I saw God and all them steps, I didn't think God wanted anything to do with me anymore. And so they said, well, think of good orderly direction or group of drunks. So the group was my higher power for a while because these were people trying to learn, how to live differently. And I was 8 years sober before I finally got back in church. And I learned the difference in religion and spiritual. And religion is man-made rules and spiritual is that personal relationship. And that was the first I heard of a personal relationship, I was like, oh, that makes so much sense. And it was probably another couple of years before I learned the power of the blood. I was like, wow, this is much, much deeper than what I ever thought. Because, as a Catholic, we learned the catechism, you memorize prayers, and I didn't even really know the meaning of the Our Father. I was giving it lip service, but, those are some pretty deep words in there. And so I was 36 when I sobered up. So there was 4 years in between that, calling the county on myself and finding my way into AA. And when I was 52, I had a near-death experience. And I was in the hospital, and my son, Larry, my oldest son, was with me. And there was this brass bridge going over this, like, misty water area. And I started across this bridge, and I thought, well, I know the grandkids will be okay. I got a little further, and I know the kids will be okay. And my last thought before I got halfway, I could see shadows on the other side, but the last thought was I thought I'd get further in my walk with Jesus. And I was sucked back through this orange vortex. And I woke up, and I turned my head. Larry was sitting there with his head down, and I said, what are you doing? And he said, praying you don't go. And that really woke up my spirit again on a much deeper level. And I got a chance to get closer with my walk in Jesus. And that was 20 years ago. I just realized that when I was making my notes. And I have done a few altar calls since that first one as an adult. If I felt I was off track, I would go up for another altar call. If there was a couple times something was blocking me and I just couldn't figure it out in my prayers, and I would do another altar call, and whatever distraction it was would become clear. And, you know, if I stay out of the way, and stay away from them distractions, I can hear them pretty good. But those distractions are just waiting, and we know who puts them there. So, the thing that I pray is that my family finds the Jesus I have found. They're all on different paths. My oldest daughter is on the New Age path, and she used Christ energy, and she used to call me to pray with her. I really miss that. But she's on this New Age with the chakras and all these tarot cards. She must have 50 different tarot cards in her RV. And after my son died, she had put her stuff in storage and traveled with the RV, and she at one point gave all the oldest of each generation a set of what she felt should be their leading. It was a angel number keychain, New Age, and tarot cards for spiritual warriors. And some other stuff, I don't know, I burnt it. You know, I talked with Deb and a couple other people, and I burnt them. You know, I didn't know if I just wanted to give them back to her, and I was like, nah, I just burnt it all, you know, and prayed while it was burning. But the thing I know for sure is that I'm a part of Abba's family. Father God, I'm guided by the Holy Spirit. I'm grafted into the family of God. I love the analogy of a garden. My heart is Christ's gardens. What seeds am I planting? Am I planting the fruits of the Spirit? Love, joy, peace, forbearance, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control? Or am I culturing weeds of deception, distraction, bitterness, resentment, anger? Our greatest command is to love one another as Christ loves us. When my son was 12, I was sitting in the woods underneath a tree, and I just happened to look up, and the whole bottom half of this tree was just nubby and bare, and the top half was just gloriously green, and I felt God telling me that's going to be my life, and it has been. Thank you.